You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 85, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. We're a proud member of the Comic Book Podcast Network. Welcome to the show, and I hope that you all survive the end of the world and the Mayan apocalypse. Yeah, well, you know, it was pretty apocalyptic around here in Chicago, but it seems like kind of blew over, and we haven't really had any kind of a settling of apocalypse on the ground, and things seem to be going along much as normal. Hopefully everybody had a very nice Christmas. As I record this, it is Christmas Eve, so Christmas hasn't yet happened, but I hope that everybody had a very Merry Christmas. And of course, this show will be going out before New Year's. And before New Year's, of course, we have Kwanzaa. So if anybody out there celebrates Kwanzaa, well, a very quasi Kwanzaa to all of you. So I hope that everybody has a very, very happy New Year. Don't drive drunk or do anything stupid like that. We want you here next episode as well. So that is pretty much all I have to say. We're going to have a longer show this week, folks. We're going to cover a couple of issues from the Walt Simonson era. Yeah, let's get back into that a little bit. Let's go through one of these storylines and find out what's going on in 1986. All right, so without any further ado, let's go ahead and move on to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
And this week we start with Thor number 373. Has a cover date of November 1986, retailed for 75 cents, and this was Marvel's 25th anniversary month. And I don't know if all of you remember, if you were all reading comics at this time or not, but Marvel had the entire month where every title had the same border that they had around the cover of various Marvel characters. We have, you know, Spider-Man and the Hulk, and the Avengers, and the Submariner, and then we have the X-Men, and X-Factor, which will factor, no pun intended. And just kidding, the pun is always intended where I'm concerned. More Avengers, I think that's the West Coast Avengers, the Fantastic Four, Luke Cage, and Thor, of course, kind of around the edge of the cover, and we have a Walt Simonson sketch of Thor, just his head, you know, just kind of looking at Thor's face on the cover. And a nice job of it, too. And we open up to the splash page where we have the story, The Gift of Death, which was written by Walter Simonson. Artwork is by Sal Buscema. Lettering is by John Workman. Max Scheel did the coloring. Ralph Macchio, not the Karate Kid, was the editor. And Jim Shooter was the editor-in-chief. And we have a splash page here, which is kind of a generic one of Thor leaving Asgard, and he's flying away from Asgard, and there's like suns exploding and comets flaming and lots of Kirby crackle, and he is flying away as Asgard glows in the background. And we see Thor flying back to Earth, thinking to himself, "At last the time has come for me to return to Midgard. Too long have I tarried far from the green fields of Earth." And he's flying towards Earth through cosmic Kirby space when he's struck by, looks like, some sort of a ray beam. And he goes, "Ugh! What weakness is this that assails my limbs? My hands shake as though with the palsy of age. Is this the attack of some unseen foe?" Yeah, I think you can count on that. "Yet already the effect fades and is gone. And as far as the eye can see, the heavens are devoid of life. Not an enemy to be seen. Perhaps the imagination of Thor has become a too restless spirit, and the son of Odin might find benefit in less time spent fighting foes, and more time spent in duller pursuits." And we see that Thor pierces the veil from Asgard's dimension to Earth with a shram. And he has appeared over the great metropolis of New York City. And we have, of course, Thor explaining, hey, this is where I live when I'm Sigurd Jarlsson. And we haven't seen Sigurd Jarlsson at this point for quite a while. In fact, I don't think that we've seen him since before the Thor Frog story, which, I mean, as we look at it here, it's not that far back. But probably, 10 issues? Maybe 20 issues? I mean, it's been a while since we've seen Sigurd Jarlsson. Anyway, so Thor has arrived back, and the first thing he does after going back to Earth is he decides he's going to go to Muspelheim. Now, Muspelheim, as you may remember, is the Fire Realm, the realm of Surtur. And he wants to go there because he wants to go hunting for Odin. So we have him landing on Earth, and he's saying, you know, nobody seems to be around, and I've been looking forward to this because it seems to me that now I need to go look for my father. And he explains why he went back to Earth to do this here. He says, in Asgard, my friends would surely try to prevent me from going, for fear that some rash act that might shatter the barriers between the worlds. But my heart tells me I must go, and a son should know his father's fate. Now, by the power of my enchanted mallet, to Muspelheim will I travel. And he goes and spins around the Ajax White Tornado, and it appears that he's going to try to teleport himself to Muspelheim. And then, all of a sudden, the tornado reappears back where he left. He is not able to pierce the barrier into Muspelheim. Ooh, that sounds ominous. And Thor says, incredible! The way to Muspelheim is closed. Even Mjolnir, whose power can conquer the raging cosmic storms, cannot breach the barriers of Surtur's realm. Is this the end of it? Shall Thor never know the fate of his royal sire? Odin, my father, am I abandoned for all time? And Thor, whine. And he decides to go back to his apartment, rather the apartment that he lives in as Sigurd Jarlsson. Doesn't bother to change back to being Sigurd Jarlsson. He just walks right in the door dressed as Thor, which seems to me to be kind of careless if you're trying to keep your identity secret. And he walks into this very small little apartment, and all there is a mattress on the floor. Yeah, but yeah, we've never seen this before. This is the first time we've seen Sigurd Jarlsson's apartment. And he says, here, within the apartment, all is exactly as I have left it. And, you know, you'd think that, you know, he lives in Avengers Mansion half the time. You think he could, get something better than just a mattress on the floor. But anyway, yeah. I never really established Sigurd Jarlsson's identity on Midgard. And now the emptiness herein mocks the very hollowness of my half-hearted endeavor. 'Tis but the skeleton of a home, not a home itself. I cannot remain here. So basically, because he hasn't bothered furnishing his apartment, he can't stay there, which doesn't really seem, Thor is just being a drama queen again. So he takes off out the window, which again, during the day, it doesn't seem like a real smart idea. Anyway, so he just thinks about going to the Avengers Mansion, and he figures that, you know, if he goes there, everybody would welcome him, but his companionship is not what he needs right now. He doesn't really think he's going to be fit company for anyone. So he decides to go sit on the Empire State Building. Is that the Empire? No, that's the Chrysler Building. He decides to go sit on the Chrysler Building and is sitting there on a ledge high above the city. You can tell it's high above the city because, you know, you see buildings down way below. And he's just kind of sitting there, and all of a sudden he sees somebody being mugged in Central Park, which to me, well, A, isn't that a really long way away from the Chrysler Building? I mean, this isn't Heimdall after all. This is Thor. Anyway, so there's a guy being mugged, and the long hair criminal hippie type says, donation time, pops. And it's like a businessman here. Let's see you give me every cent you'd got to a worthy cause. And so the guy hands over his wallet. He's like, not bad, Dad, but you know I ain't had enough fun for one night yet. How about if we begin with your kneecaps and work our way up? That's either a threat of violence or a promise of sex. I can't really tell. Oh, he has a gun, so I guess he's more a thug. Anyway, and as he's getting ready to attack the old man, a hammer appears under his nose, and he realizes what's going on here. He's like, oh no. And the cops are there on the scene, and they're like, thanks again, Thor. We've been looking for the park prowler for some time.
Glad you were on the job. See you around.
Let's move it, Busta.
And Thor is thinking to himself, these mortals risk their lives every day they walk the streets of their city. In the end, death is always the answer to every question, and mortals bear it because they must. But death is not the answer for a god, and I will not rest until I have found the answers I seek. And we then shift scenes back to Asgard, and we have Heimdall, who is overseeing the construction of this giant scabbard around Surtur's sword. Remember, you know, Surtur was defeated by Odin. He dropped his sword, which is called Twilight. And remember, it was generating radiation, and Loki was siphoning it off to keep his spells alive, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, this was a while back. You can go back and listen to the old shows and hear all about that. So anyway, they're building a giant scabbard around the sword, and Heimdall is overseeing it, and it's like being told by one of the workers, the superstructure is nearly finished, Heimdall. The great sheath will soon be ready for the treasure. Unintentional sexual innuendo, take a drink. And none too soon, says Heimdall. I, for one, shall be thankful when a weapon of such incalculable power is secured, safe from either harm or meddling. Do you see the workers working on the sword? And yeah, they're uncovering all the rocks that had buried it. Remember, Volstagg had kind of knocked over a bunch of rocks on it. And they're unburying it and at the same time, I guess, as they're building this scabbard for it. The great sword of Surtur will rest here until the end of time when its master shall come to claim it, if the ancient prophecies are true. And we then shift scenes yet again to the home of Volstagg. Now, if you remember, last time we visited the Simonson era, we had a story about, remember, Thug Thatcher? And he was going to kill Jane Foster. Actually, he did kill Jane Foster. And then they kind of went back in time and killed Thug Thatcher instead. And remember, he had shot his old Moll Ruby. And Ruby had these two kids, Mick and Kevin. And they were brought to Asgard because they were now orphans. So we have these two kids and they're in Volstagg's house. And this is one of the things that, and I have to say, and I got to point it out next story as well. That one of the things I don't like about the Simonson era, and I'm generally speaking, I like his stuff, but he puts too many storylines about little kids into his books. And yeah, I kind of get it. I mean, he had trying to relate to the readers, and I don't know if he thought that lots of little kids read comics or what. And but yeah, they have the too many young children in these Simonson era comics, and that's, I mean, that's my opinion, but my opinion's right. It's my show. Anyway, so we have Mick and Kevin. They wake up and they're like, Mick, wake up, look. And he's like, huh, where are we? Who's that? This sure isn't our room. He looks like, it can't be, can it, Kev? Santa Claus? Is that you? And it's not, of course, Santa Claus. It is Volstagg, and he's sitting there in a chair watching them.
Nay, boys, I am not that good saint. I am called Volstagg, but I am a friend of all children. Oh, my. And I am a friend of Thor's.
Oh, yeah, Thor was with us. He was visiting Mom.
Indeed, and Thor brought you here to me.
But what about Mom?
Children, this is a time for courage. Your mother was killed by an assassin. Thor slew the assassin himself, but too late to save your mother. She cannot care for you any longer, so Thor has brought you here to stay with me for a while until you are old enough to care for yourselves.
And he's like, you're lying! Mom wouldn't leave us! We didn't see her die! Where is she really? Mom, Mom, where are you?
And we then shift scenes again. And we're back on Earth, and we see Sigurd Jarlsson, and he's dressed in his, Sigurd Jarlsson outfit, which is blue jeans and a red shirt, and he's carrying his hammer around in his gym bag, and he decides to go to the west side of Manhattan and back to the construction site. Remember back when he first took on the identity of Sigurd Jarlsson, which is way back when? It was, what, Thor 340 or something like that. And you know, they're on the building site. Remember, he was a steeplejack or whatever for a while, you know, building this building. And then Fafnir came and destroyed it. I mean, we're getting back into some old, even at this point, some pretty old issues of Thor. You know, it's like 2 years before the story was published. And so Thor, disguised as Sigurd, is going to see Jerry, who is the foreman of the site, and wondering if he'll even remember him. But of course he does. He immediately recognizes him because, you know, he looks just like Thor. And he's like, Sigurd Jarlsson, you son of a gun. Great to see you again.
Where the heck have you been keeping yourself? You looking for work again? We could use a good steeplejack. You sure went up the ladder in a hurry before when that dragon knocked us back to square one.
Thor's like, you don't seem to have made much progress since I was here last.
Listen, Busta, if you'd had a building knocked down as many times as this one, you'd count yourself lucky that the insurance companies even let you in the front door, let alone cover you. You know, you look a little peaking, Sigurd, like maybe you lost some weight.
And the beard is new, too. Yeah, I remember Thor grew a beard, and so he has that during this era. And his beard is growing really fast, even now, because really only a few days have passed since he grew it. And now it's like, it looks like he's had it for months. You got to think that if Stan Lee had written this comic, he would have just said something about gods being able to grow facial hair really fast, and that would have settled it. The magic of comics. I mean, if it actually had been that many months rather than that many issues, then yeah, it would make sense. But anyway, Sigurd's like, yeah, I'm really just here to say hello. And Jerry realizes that there's something wrong and that Sigurd is really didn't come just as a social call. He's like, on account of us being old buddies? Come on, Sigurd, spill it. And Sigurd's like, well, actually, my father passed away recently, I guess.
It's tough to get left alone. Is that it? You got any other family?
He's like, nobody nearby.
He's like, what about that girl you saved? And he's talking about, remember, Lorelei, who was, of course, the cause of a lot of his trouble. And Sigurd's like, well, that didn't exactly work out. And no close friends either, I'll bet. You live out in Bay Ridge by yourself, right? So Sigurd's like, yeah, Jerry, I didn't mean to bother you. It's good to see you, but I need to go. And he's like, hey, listen, Sigurd, it's just after 5. We're shutting down for the day. So what do you say you come home with me and grab a bite? And he grabs Sigurd's arm, and he's dragging him along. He's like, well, I don't really think I should do that. It's like, ah, baloney. The old lady loves to have company. Besides, I run the ship. And he's have these workmen are getting ready to leave. One guy's sitting here smoking a cigarette. And so Jerry and Sigurd arrive at the brownstone where Jerry lives. And he's, I guess there's a place called Cobble Hill, which, you know, if I knew more about New York City, then maybe this would probably make more sense to me. But, you know, I live in Chicago, so that's completely out of my range. So he's like, Cobble Hill's a nice place, but maybe a little too fancy these days. We were living here when all these yuppies were just baby boomers. Good thing, too. We sure as heck couldn't afford the rents they're paying. Now, I could go off on a tangent here and explain rent control really briefly. So I'm just going to do it really, really quickly. In some parts of the country, and I think that Manhattan, New York City, is one of these places, that if you go into a apartment, you basically, your rent never goes up. You just pretty much pay the same rent year after year after year, as long as you stay there. So if you've been staying there for 50 years, you might be paying a really, really low rent compared to all of the other properties around you. And I know that doesn't work that way in most of the places where you people probably live. I doubt we have very many people here who live in rent-controlled apartments. But this is how you get a variety of people living in a place like Manhattan, as opposed to just all, you know, rich yuppie types. Boutiques instead of Woolworths. Cuisine instead of coffee shops. Getting too rich for my blood. They must all be nuts.
And they go into the apartment and it's like,
Tina, honey, I'm home. Got a friend with me.
And open up on a apartment very, very full of children. Again, Simonson and his children. And there's a woman cooking dinner. It's like, Jerry? And he's like,
hi, sugar. Say hello to Sigurd, kids. He's a friend, and he's going to be having dinner with us tonight.
And there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like six kids.
And it looks like they range in age from, you know, the teenager down to like 3-year-old.
And Jerry's introducing them to Sigurd. He's like,
that's Ernesto, Pietro, Giovanni, Maria, Rosa, and Gabriella. You can memorize them later. I still don't think I got them all right.
And the two older girls are swooning over Sigurd. He's like,
ooh, I really like ponytails. Wow, Dad never brought any friends like this home before.
You girls mind your manners, the wife says. You think you were raised on the street? And the house is not even straightened up. Jerry, what do you think you're doing? Bringing home guests without a word.
And Thor's like, oh, perhaps I should leave. And he's like,
hold it, Sigurd. Come here a second, Tina. Listen to me. Sigurd's old man just died. He's got no family and no friends. He's a heck of a nice guy. And he isn't married.
Okay, why is that even relevant? I mean, obviously these kids are too young for him. I mean, it just seems that unless they're like swingers or something, I don't know. So Thor is feeling kind of uncomfortable at this point. He goes to leave. It's like, Jerry, I really think I'd...
Oh, you never mind what I said, Sigurd. We'd be happy to have you for dinner. I clobber Jerry later.
And she says, don't worry, they have plenty of food. You know, she tells Sigurd, I'll go sit down in the living room. And he's sitting there. And he says, you relax. Dinner will be ready in 15 minutes. And she pushes in the little kid. It actually looks a whole lot like the little kids that we just saw at Volstagg's house. Actually, this whole family, because they're being drawn by Sal Buscema, they all look almost exactly the same, except they're different sizes. This little kid looks like 3 or 4 years old. He's like,
does your mom make you eat all your vegetables? Mine says that's how I get to be big and strong, too.
And we have her Tina, or whatever her name is. She's in the kitchen cooking. And she says, he seems like a nice man. And not married yet. What a shame. Just last week, I was telling Judy that, and there's a scream coming from the living room. And it's little Ernesto. It's like, Ernesto, my angel, what's happened? And he's like, eee. The people are going in the living room, and they see that Thor is sitting on the floor, and he's tossing Ernesto around like a beach ball. And he's like, hire, Mr. Sigurd, hire! And so he's having a little kid fun here, a little heartwarming scene. And we then shift scenes to them sitting down for dinner, and they have the six kids and Jerry and Tina and Thor sitting around a table, and they ask Thor if he wants to say grace, which is kind of ironic, and I like that kind of little touch to the story, and declines, but Ernesto, the little one, he decides he's going to say it, and so, yeah, they had the little scene of Thor getting Ernesto to eat his vegetables and shit, and it's kind of dumb. Anyway, so they have that, and just skip over that. And the Thor is all thankful and stuff for the dinner, so he helps them do the dishes, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, basically Thor's having some family time with Jerry and his wife and their six kids. They finally say, you guys really made some time here, but it's still getting kind of late. Listen, Sig, why don't you stay here tonight? We got an extra room upstairs. Be happy to have you. And Thor's like, well, I really think I should. And one of the girls is like,
oh, please, Sigurd. We'd love to have you.
This is kind of creepy. It's like, very well. You are all very kind. And all the kids are like, hooray! And he's like, how about a bedtime story, Sig?
Yes, tell us a story.
I'm too tired to think of any good ones right now, rascals. But if it's all right with your parents, I'll take you and anyone else who wants to go over to Central Park tomorrow. We'll visit the zoo, and if you behave yourself, I'll tell you a story then.
And we then shift scenes back to Asgard, and we have Baldur in the throne room of Asgard, and he receives a visitor, and it's one of the ravens, Munin, who's, remember, the only surviving raven of Odin. And he brings a gift for Baldur, and it turns out to be a feather, a black feather from Hugin, who, remember, was killed by Searcher's demons way, way back. It's been a while now. And Baldur says, a single black feather, and I do not need the omniscience of Odin to know to whom this feather belonged. You have done well, and there may be a help for us. Summon Heimdall, Munin, quickly, and... Heimdall is actually, he's right there already. He's actually there in the very next panel. He says, I have come, Baldur. What charge have thee for me? And Baldur's like, watch over Asgard, as you once watched over the Rainbow Bridge, Heimdall. Munin has set a task before me that only I have any hope of achieving, because I am so great and have such a huge ego. And he says, and if the fates are generous, I may succeed. And he goes riding off on his horse with Munin flying in front of him. So this is a mysterious mission that he's gone out on. And we have a cut to the next day, and we have Thor and all the kids, and they're going to Central Park. And it looks like they've just got done looking at the zoo. Thor's like, we've given your parents an afternoon to themselves, so perhaps their kindness to me has been rewarded. Yeah, I wonder why. Boom, chicka, bow, bow.
Are you still sad about your father, Sigurd? We're very sorry.
Thank you, Ernesto. I'm sad because my father vanished, and I don't know what happened to him.
But maybe he'll come back.
Maybe so. I guess I still have hope, but I don't know what to do.
It's like a story without an end. And so he sits down with the kids, and they're kind of sitting around in Central Park. One of the kids is like,
can we have our story now?
Like, surely, Gabriella, this shall be a story of old gods who once roamed the earth and all the realm of enchantment that surrounded it. And he tells the story of Thor. And he's saying, you know, Thor's going out around in the realm of the frost giants, and he's slaying frost giants with his hammer. But he's kind of heading back, and it's dusk, and he comes to a river. The far side in the shadows, he could just make out the fairy and the ferryman, and calls the ferryman over to him, which is kind of weird because, you know, Thor can fly and shit. So the ferryman comes, and the ferryman's like,
beggars, rags, tatters, I doubt you have a place to call your own. Neither thieves nor robbers, but only the deserving do I carry across the wide river. Tell me who you are if you want to cross.
I am the son of Odin, strongest of the gods. Mjolnir is my weapon, and Thor the Thunderer is my name. Who are you? Are you some outlaw?
Harbard, they call me. I hide not my name, and I can hold my own against a windbag like you.
And we see that Harbard, he looks a whole lot like Odin. And there's generally a reason why mysterious strangers look a lot like Odin. So anyway, he's in a good blue robe, and he's got a staff, and he's got the hat covering one eye. And anyway, and Thor's like, what? You're not worth the trouble of waiting and getting wet, but I'll repay you when I've crossed.
Bah, I'll wait for you. You haven't fought anyone as strong as me since you met Hrungnir the giant.
I laid him out lifeless with a single blow, ferryman. What have you done?
I've magicked women and set prince against prince. War is what I've caused, Thor. And what have you done?
I slew the giant's women who would have slain mankind. Now come, row me across.
Never. Who would trust Thor, Oathbreaker?
What? You lying fellow. The word of Thor is his bond.
Then swear to someone else. I'm not rowing you across today.
And Thor was forced to walk the long way around the river, and it took him a lot longer to get home. And when he reached the halls of Asgard, he found the ferryman before him. His own father, Odin, has been disguised as Harbard, and the kids are aghast.
His own father? Why would he do such a mean thing?
I've never really understood that myself until now. Partly it was the game. Odin loved to roam the nine worlds, and loved to put on guises and fool people. But perhaps he also wanted his son Thor to know that in the end, you have only yourself to rely on. No matter who you are, no one can carry you across the river. Not your father, not your mother, not your girl or boyfriend. You have to walk through the shadows on your own. And the kids are like, tell us another story. Yeah, one with dragons and elves. And you children are worse than small trolls. And we see that creeping up the embankment of the reservoir here are some frogs. Yeah, we're kind of familiar looking frogs, too. We saw them in the Thor frog story. And here's a place where Sal Buscema's art is as good as Simonson's. Or else Simonson drew the frogs. I'm not really sure which. It could be either one, I suppose. And the kids see the frogs coming. It's like, ick, frogs, shoo, scat. And Thor's like, nay, hold, Rosa. I think my old friend Puddle Gulp has recognized me, even though I was not wearing a beard when last we met.
You're kidding. Wow. Do you really know some frogs? Can I take him to school?
And Thor's like, I doubt they would care to leave the reservoir here in the murk, but we can say hello to them. Come, Puddle Gulp. Come, Bug Eye. And the two frogs jump into Thor's hand, and the kids are like,
I didn't know frogs could do that.
Perhaps not any frog would, but I did say they're my friends. And the frogs are talking to Thor, who apparently in Thor form can understand the speech of frogs. And Ernesto, the littlest one, is like,
wow, are they talking to you?
And the older boy, it seems like he's the oldest of the kids, like, don't be silly, Ernesto, frogs can't talk. And Thor is like, what? When did this happen? And he's, because obviously he understands what the frogs are saying. Very well, Puddle Gulp. You and Bug Eye get to go back to the others and stay under cover for a while. I'll try to discover the truth of the matter. And the kids are like, well, maybe frogs can talk. Sigurd? Trying to get his attention, but he's a bit distracted by what the frogs told him, whatever it was. And Thor's like, what? I'm sorry, Pietro. I was thinking of something else.
Listen, children, I'm going to have to send you home. Something terrible seems to be happening, and I must look into it. I'm a sort of undercover policeman.
Who talks to frogs?
Yes, well, there are many kinds of policemen, you see.
Don't worry, Thor. Your secret's safe with us.
What? Like it's some big shock that they figured out who he is.
I wouldn't say that Sigurd's disguise is obvious, but even a frog can see through it, so you know it's not that great.
Papa once thought you were Spider-Man, but you're too big for that. And with your hair, Thor seemed like a pretty good guess. Besides, we snuck a look inside your bag last night while you were washing dishes. Are you really the only one who can lift your hammer?
Almost.
Well, I've read a lot about Norse mythology and probably know everything you do, almost.
Then you would know that I am the guardian of mankind, and when danger threatens, I must go. But first, I must send you home.
Oh, yeah? How?
And rather than send them on a bus or taxi or whatever, he decides to do his little Ajax White Tornado thing and send them home with his hammer. Sends them home with the giant shrikrowl. So with the bratty kids out of the way, he bangs his hammer on the ground and changes from Sigurd Jarlsson into Thor and has wandered off into the woods. Or he's kind of going off into the underbrush of Central Park, and he's saying out loud so that everybody can hear him. Far beneath the streets of Manhattan is a network of tunnels inhabited by strange beings. I myself have met at least one of the inhabitants, a piper whose enchanted playing could command animals such as his pet alligators, and I took his flute into my mouth. Oh my. He was a strange but honorable man, and apparently there were many other dwellers in the dark as well. The hidden entrance here beside the great lawn will take me underneath the city to find the answer to this riddle. And we see that he disappears into the ground, and he's wandering in the sewer now. Puddlegulp says that the alligators have begun to die, and terrible screaming has been heard. If he's right, then something deadly stalks these tunnels. And we then shift scenes to Hel, and of course the death goddess Hela, who's spying on Thor through her cosmic voyeuroscope. And she's kind of gloating here.
So you still have hope, Thor. I shall cure that. Little do you suspect that your momentary weakness as you return to Earth was a gift from me. Shortly, the potent spell will begin to take effect, and you shall begin to learn what hopelessness really is. There are no shadows when there is no light.
And we shift scenes back to the sewers, and here we pick up from another comic book. At least this is an ongoing storyline that was running through a lot of Marvel titles at this time. And so basically what we had going on is there was this group called the Marauders, and they're this anti-mutant evil villain group, and they're going through New York City killing every mutant they find, or trying to kill every mutant they find. And the Morlocks, who are these mutants that live down in the sewers of New York City, they've decided they're going to go and kill all of them. So basically the Marauders going through the sewers, and they manage to capture the Angel, who is one of the members of X-Factor, former X-Man, you know, the Angel. If you're familiar with Marvel Comics, you know who that is. And I think he's actually appeared in Thor before, way, way back. But anyway, so Thor is going through the sewers, and he sees all these dead people laying around, and says, everywhere I look, I find death and destruction. Hela has wielded a free hand in this domain. Something terrible is loose in these tunnels, slaying the inhabitants ruthlessly. And we shift scenes to where the Angel has been captured by the Marauders and has been pinned to the wall with these harpoon things. And we have, you know, the members of the Marauders, there's the Blockbuster and this big burly woman called Harpoon. And he's shouting out, "Aye!" And Thor hears it. And he's like, there's yet some poor souls in these tunnels of evil, and his tormentors have not yet slain him. And Thor comes in, and Blockbuster sees him. He's like, Harpoon!
I hear him, Blockbuster! Somebody's coming! Another mutant, still down here alive! Into the shadows, quick!
And is that a woman? I can't really tell. It might be. Or maybe it's just a man with a really dumb haircut. Anyway, so Thor comes across the scene. It's like, whatever else they may have been, these were people who deserved their lives. And if I can find their assassins, then I will be their avenger.
And the Blockbuster's like, then heads up, Buster, because this is your chance right now.
And we have one of the other characters. And I don't know this character's name, so I really
I don't know what to tell you. Anyway, it's like, the Marauders are here! And they kind of grab onto Thor, and they're wrestling him down, the three of them. And Thor's like, by the power of the storm that is mine to command, I say thee nay! And he swings his hammer, and he just knocks them all aside like dolls. And bangs his hammer on the ground, and he's like, the living lightning shall give thee pause. And he's shooting lightning all around, and they can't see. And they decide to back off. They cut a strategic withdrawal. In other words, they run away like cowards. And Thor's like, flee, cravens. The tunnels are not large enough to hide you from the wrath of Thor. And he decides that he really ought to rescue the angel, who is kind of pinned to the wall behind him. And so he does, and you know, he remembers the angel kinda. You know, he doesn't really remember meeting the angel before. I think, though, they did meet at some point. Thor realizes that he's still alive and says, I must remove these spikes that pin him to the wall and lift him down. Hark, the sound of footsteps approaching behind me. Methinks that the marauders have gotten over their first fright and returned to finish the job. Doubtless they will seek to slay Thor as well. Come, bold assassins, you shall find the son of Odin waiting for you in the dark, but they will learn that evil walks in the same shadows as the good. And we have next issue's blurb, Fires of the Night, guest starring X-Factor. That's a huge shock. Of course, now, one of the things you may not realize is that Walt Simonson was writing X-Factor at the same time. So, of course, crossover with Thor is pretty much inevitable. And that is Thor number 373. Now, like what I've been doing in other shows where I cover two issues, I'm going to save the commentary for the end. And we're just going to go ahead and move on to the next issue. That being Thor number 374. Has a cover date of December of 1986. Retail for 75 cents. And we have cover by Walt Simonson. I have to say, not one of his better pieces of work here. Showing a blockbuster, and he's punching Thor in the face. And we have the angel, he's still pinned up against the wall. Though he looks kind of like a cardboard cutout in this picture. And way in the background, which apparently this is a very spacious sewer. Way in the background, we see the very deformed figures of Cyclops and Marvel Girl of X-Factor who are coming and racing forward. Yeah, the cover blurb says, guest starring X-Factor, or what's left of them. And we open up to the splash page where, of course, we have the title of the story, Fires of the Night. And we see the credits, of course, which is the same gang as last time. Writing is by Walt Simonson, lettering by John Workman, editor is Ralph Macchio, penciling and inking is by Sal Buscema, coloring by Max Scheele, and the editor-in-chief is Jim Shooter. And we pick up exactly where we left off last issue. Thor saying, I'm waiting here for you. And it is the Marauders. They've come back. And he's like, heads up, Goldilocks, because this time we're going to be carrying you out feet first. And they're coming after Thor, and we see the angel still there pinned to the wall. And I'm kind of glad because we have a little bit of exposition now. We get to hear a little bit more about these characters. So I'm just going to go ahead and read the exposition because this tells you who the Marauders are. And I couldn't really remember, and now you guys can know too. And we have Harpoon, and I still can't tell if it's a guy or a girl. And he or she is saying, you scared us off with a little mumbo jumbo the first time around, but the Marauders are ready for you now. And Harpoon claims first blood. Nothing that lives can survive the power of my energy lances. And she hurls a harpoon at Thor. And the sound effect is scream, which is really weird. And Thor easily bats aside the harpoon with his hammer. It's like, vainglorious boaster. I am no helpless prey awaiting slaughter, but a warrior of Asgard, wielder of the hammer and son of Odin. The energy of your weapon is as the empty air compared to the power of mighty Mjolnir. And with a skrik-thou, Thor destroys the harpoon. But then he is beset by the blockbuster, who really barrels into Thor with a car-wharm. And he says, bah, fancy weapons ain't nothing compared to the strength of blockbuster. I'll wring your head from your neck before you can raise that blasted hammer again. And Thor bats him aside with a rack, and he says, you had best move more quickly if you expect to write Thor's epitaph. No force of mortal man can stay my hand or the power of my hammer. And then we have the third member of the team, and this is this woman called Vertigo. Arg, Vertigo, quick, zap him.
That's enough from you, handsome. When I'm finished with you, you won't be able to stand up, let alone lift your hammer.
And Thor's like, dizziness assails me from every quarter, and if I fall, then surely my foes will overcome me. A vortex spun by Mjolnir may reverse the effects of Vertigo's attack. Is whirling his hammer around and creating a whirlwind underground. He's like, what fire fight fire? Are you proof against your own power, lady? And she's like,
oh, I'm losing my balance.
And he's like, enough! Let the lightning and the storm speak with the voice of Thor. And he's summoning lightning down in the sewer. And hopefully there's not any methane built up down in the sewer. And the giant baroom with lightning shooting out of his hammer. And the Marauders are like, the heat! I can't stand it! And they go running off again. And Thor's yelling after them, flee, cravens! You will not escape the wrath of Thor. Just retribution shall be your lot for the foul deeds you have wrought here beneath the earth. But what of their latest victim? And he turns around and he unpins the angel from the wall. Thor's like, he seems different from the scores of dead I have seen within the tunnels. Yet his features are vaguely familiar. He wears the tattered remnants of a uniform and bears the wounds of recent battle.
I don't think you can really say that those are tattered remnants of a costume. He's actually wearing a costume.
He was not going quietly to his death, as others the Marauders have slain here. His wounds are grave, his head feverish. Though I am no longer the mortal doctor as I once was, even a blind man would know that he is in need of medical attention. Yeah, do you think? And the angel starts to talk. He's kind of delirious. He's like, is Artie safe? Did we make it? I do not understand thy question.
I guess he didn't. I can't seem to get anything right anymore. Just leave me alone. Let me die.
Yeah, the angel is a drama queen, almost as much as Thor. The will to live is vital if he is to survive his injuries. The doctor I once was demands that I succor his needs, but the Viking warrior is not so sure. He has given his all in battle, and Valhalla would be his reward in my world. Should I deny him his dying wish in this one? And there's a noise coming from behind, a shriek, and Thor whirls about, going, eh? With a ka-chuck, a piece of concrete falls from the ceiling and lands on the ground. And Thor's like, the lightning and the heat have weakened the structure of the tunnel dangerously. Come, my winged friend, dying or not, I cannot leave you here in the blackness to perish alone and unheralded. Together we shall seek the sun, and woe to any who come between us and our goal. So Thor goes off with the angel in his arms and going, yeah, back to the surface, apparently. And we then shift scenes. And once again, we are back in Asgard. And back to Baldur, who's riding through this big desert. And Munin, the raven, is flying in front of him and guiding him to his destination. And Munin's going, caw, caw! And Baldur's like, the endless desert is well named, Munin. The endless desert is well named, Munin. And yet, through all its vast and empty reaches, I have felt the burning gaze of unblinking eyes that see everything with the sharpness of the razor. Indeed, Munin, I too feel the presence of another. The time has come. And he raises his hand up. He's like, hear me! 'Tis Baldur of the White Ring who calls. I seek an audience. Grant me this boon for the sake of the token I wear. And apparently he's wearing a white ring. It's the first I've heard of it. And nothing happens. He's kind of just sitting here listening. But all of a sudden, this giant worm dragon thing comes bursting up out of the sand with a giant shroom. Baldur's horse is scared and rears back. And Baldur's like, steady, silver hoof. We have not traveled all this weary way from Asgard to quail before the very thing we seek when it grants our request. Yes, Munin, we have found the object of our search. And Munin says, caw, caw! And the dragon worm creature speaks.
You have courage, little god, to stand boldly before the slayer of so many little gods. What do you wish?
I wish to speak with you.
Even knowing that merely to speak with me may be enough to change the course of your life?
We are all of us in the hands of fate, even the gods. And the worm changes shape and turns into a beautiful woman. Yeah, it's a typical Sal Buscema beautiful woman. It's like the fairy tale princess, or like the women who lived in the tower that were being held by captive there by the giant. Remember that? Yeah. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. So we have the beautiful woman here is like,
Weird bids thee welcome, gentle Baldur. Few indeed wear the tokens of the Sisters of Fate, and fewer still have ever returned to seek a second audience.
And Baldur gets off the horse, his
Necessity compelled my journey, m'lady. I have come to ask a favor, one which only the fates themselves can grant.
The fates are notoriously fickle, but we cannot refuse the unselfish request of Baldur the Shining, who wears the white token. But beware, my brave. Weird may one day ask that the favor be returned. This is what you have come for, is it not? A vial of water from the well of life itself? Use it wisely. Such a gift cannot be given twice.
But how did you know?
Did you not yourself say? The burning gaze of unblinking eyes that see everything, Baldur? And the fate of Baldur is one of special interest to the watching eyes of the three sisters.
And Baldur explains a little bit, says, when the raven Munin returned to Asgard from the depths of Muspelheim, he came alone. His brother Hugin did not return. But Munin brought a single feather back from that land of fire. And when Munin gave me the feather, I thought of Weird's well of life.
And so he takes the bottle of water that she brought him. It's like a little flask slash vase sort of thing. Just tiny little thing. And he puts a few drops of water on this feather. And the feather starts to glow and tremble in his hand. And Baldur looks very surprised. Says, the feather glows. It trembles in my hand like a living thing. And it changes into a raven. And it's like, the ravens of Odin shall soar above the mountains of the nine worlds again. Hugin lives.
And Hugin is, takes off into the air. And Munin is there too. And they're kind of wobbling together in the air. Happily, apparently. And Baldur turns around, says, my lady Weird, from the bottom of my heart, I thank my lady. And she's gone, and has gone like the wind across the sands. And yet, I think she already knows my thought. My thanks, lady, wherever you may be. The gratitude of Baldur is thine. Come, Munin, come, Hugin. The golden realm of Asgard awaits our return. And he goes riding off.
So we cut to the sewers of New York City and to the Marauders. And so we have Harpoon and Blockbuster and Sabretooth, who I'd kind of forgotten was actually one of the members. He's this guy who has like Wolverine-type powers. So Harpoon is talking to Sabretooth, and I guess this is a woman. It's so hard to tell. I guess it is a chick anyway. So she's like, looks like our job's just about done, Sabretooth. Too bad about that guy with the wings. He's lucky Thor showed up when he did. I sure would like to have nailed him, but he was way out of my league.
I'm sure she would love it if Thor had nailed her.
You should have seen him shatter my harpoon. Pity I wasn't with you, Harpoon. There isn't much my claws won't cut, and my speed second to none. God or no god, I could have torn him apart. Of course, our team does have a strong man on it, but I suppose he just wasn't up to it. Good enough for Morlocks, maybe, but not for a god or whatever Thor really is. But it's tough to get good help, right, Blockbuster?
And he's kind of rubbing it in. The Blockbuster failed to capture Thor. And Harpoon looks like she's hugging on to a Sabretooth in a loving way. And Harpoon's like,
oh, let him alone, Sabretooth. You weren't there. You didn't get singed by that lightning.
And Blockbuster is kind of stomping off in a huff and feeling sorry for himself, thinking to himself,
good enough for the Morlocks, but not a god. Simp. I'm going to find Goldilocks and wring his neck like I promised. And then I'm going to come back, Mr. Smart Guy, and take you apart claw by claw.
And then he goes wandering off into the sewers. We cut to another place in the sewers where Thor is carrying out the angel. He's got him hurled over his shoulder. And he's wandering around, trying to head for the surface. And Thor hears something. It's a small sobbing, like an injured child, or a frightened one. No doubt 'tis one of the denizens of the tunnels, hardly more than a babe. The Marauders have missed him. It turned out this is Artie, and Artie is this weird mutant with this malformed head. And Artie is a mute, but he can create images with his brain. And Thor sees him hiding in one of the tunnels, like, child, I am a friend. Come with me, and no harm shall befall you. Artie looks up at Thor, his big empty eyes. He says, he stares at my burden as though he recognizes him. Could this be the Artie that my angel spoke of? And is that my angel? There's something here we don't know. My angel? Okay. And Artie summons up an image of my gravestones. He's like, Thor's thinking to himself, what's this? A vision appearing before me in the air.
Some trick of a child's? A graveyard? Ah, I think I understand. No, little one. The man I bear is not dead, but gravely wounded, and I am attempting to find a way out of these tunnels to the light. And if you will come with us, we shall find a way out together. And there he kind of takes Artie's hand, and we see here a crackling from above, like, and the blockbuster comes bursting down from above. And he's like, at last, heads up, chump, I ain't blowing it this time. And Thor sends Artie running and says, run, little one, this foe is beyond you. And the blockbuster stomps on Thor's arm, and you see, he breaks his arm, and there's a sound effect snap. And so the blockbuster's, you know, hammering on Thor, and he's like, ain't no second chances with this dude. Gotta hit him with everything I can. And Thor's thinking to himself, the agony is indescribable. He hath shattered the very bones of my arm. My hammer is still at my side. And this time it's gonna stay there, says the blockbuster. You ain't getting the chance to use it again. And the angel is regained consciousness, and he seems a little more coherent than he was before. But he doesn't know what's going on. He's like, that noise, what's happening? The giant who helped pin me to the wall, he's about to kill somebody else. No matter what the cost, I can't let him do it. Not while I still draw breath. And the angel kind of soars at him from behind and grabs him around the neck. And the angel's like, my wings can't carry my weight, but I won't be doing any more flying anyway. And Blockbuster's like, huh? Well, what do you know? The winged wonder is back. Should've played dead, Chucklehead. Maybe if I rip out a few more of your feathers, you'll get a little smarter. And he's like, grrrrg. And we see Artie is hiding behind a pillar, all scared. And Thor is whirling his hammer around. A moment's respite has revived me, but at what cost? Now must come the moment of reckoning. Blockbuster, minion of evil, turn and face the son of Odin. And Blockbuster's like, everybody's coming back from the dead today. I'll take care of you in a second, Goldilocks. And Thor's hammer smashes him right in the face with a crash. And Thor's like, your time at Blockbuster has run out. May Hela, goddess of death, deal with you as you deserve, assassin. You see the angel there, and Artie is coming up behind Thor. Thor is, you know, seeing if the angel's still alive here. He says, you, brave warrior, have saved the life of the Thunder God, and Thor shall never forget it. May the fates grant that you survive. 'Twould be a tragedy for such a brave warrior to perish. Thor is saying, we had best see about finding a way out of this labyrinth. And Artie comes up and touches Thor. He's like, yes, Artie. And he creates a vision of Cyclops and Marvel Girl. And Thor's like, another of your visions. A man and a woman wearing uniforms similar to that of our angel. His companions? They look somehow familiar. I seem to remember them from another time and place. And the tug on my arm tells me that you may know where to find them. Lead on, child. I shall bring our fallen angel. Again, consciousness has fled his battered body. But he hath performed this day as a warrior true, and we shall see him safely removed from this dank and evil realm. And they continue on. So we then come back to Asgard and the home of Volstagg. And Volstagg is going up to the guest room where he left Kevin and Mick. And these are the two Earth kids that are staying at Volstagg's house. And part of this really annoying little subplot, which, like I said, you know, that bothers me that there's so many of these subplots revolve around children. Anyway, he doesn't hear anything, so he goes into the room, and he sees them there, and they're on the bed, and they're kind of crying about their mother, and they're sitting there, and it's like,
Dad wouldn't have wanted us to cry, Kev. That's what being brave is all about. Mom always said Dad was the bravest man she ever met, because after all, he married her. But Mom's not here. I want her, and I want to go home. Why would she go away and leave us alone?
And Volstagg is like, where is she? My children, your mother sleeps peacefully in the gentle embrace of the earth. Her time in this world is done. It is the way of all living things. But your time is just beginning, and no one should think of going anywhere in an empty stomach. So come with me, little ones, and he picks them up in one of each arm and carries them downstairs. And he's talking to them as he does, says, I have many children of my own. They are waiting for us in the dining room. We'll feed you foods to toughen you up proper and make hardier mortals of you than have ever trod the golden paths of Asgard before. And he walks into the room, and there's all these kids gathered around the table, and they're like, Father,
They're here!
And we meet, again, a lot of Volstagg's children. We're told at some point in the past that he had 18 children. This is back in the old Tales of Asgard series. And all of a sudden, Mick and Kev are surrounded by all these Asgardian children. And they're like,
Hi, Father told us you might be coming down for breakfast. But we didn't believe him. Daddy's such a liar. He said you came from Midgard.
That's Earth, young lady.
And Mick is like,
I guess we do. I'm Mick. This is Kevin. He doesn't say much.
And we see one child who we recognize right away. He says,
I'm Gunnhild, but nobody calls me that because I don't like it. I'm really Hildy. And you're really from Earth? That's great. None of us have ever been to Earth. We want to hear all about it.
And so they're being surrounded by all these kids. And for the first time, Mick and Kev are looking a little bit happy anyway. Hildy's like,
maybe we can go there sometime with you.
And then all the kids are arguing about who they get to sit next to. And we see Volstagg's wife. And so I think it's only the second time we've actually seen her. And it's like, oh, isn't that cute? And we then shift scenes back to the sewers where Thor is carrying out the angel. And Artie is kind of leading the way. And he's thinking about Artie's mutant powers. Like, little Artie's abilities are fascinating. It is as though he possesses a seeing eye mind. His vision seemed not only to be able to show us thoughts, but also to guide us where he wishes to go. And it would seem he hath found the ones he sought. And they turn a corner, and there are Cyclops and Marvel Girl. And they're like, Artie! And Marvel Girl's like,
thank heavens you're safe, Artie. We were so worried about you.
And Cyclops is like, Jean, look, there's someone else. It's the Avenger Thor, with Angel. Your comrade is sorely injured and in need of medical attention. And the angel's like, hi, Psyche. Guess I really couldn't carry my own weight this time. You shouldn't have come back for me. I'm not worth it. If you thought we walked through hell, fire, and blood to find you so we could carry you back to X-Factor headquarters and dump you down the garbage disposal, mister, you've got another thing coming. Angel! And Angel falls down unconscious. And the Marvel Girl, using her powers as a telekinesis, kind of levitating the angel. And they're talking about they need to get him to a doctor. And Cyclops explains to Thor, says, excuse me, Thor, you don't know us, but we're...
But I do know you now. We're not the three of you members of the original X-Men some years ago when the Avengers faced Lucifer? And this is a story that we haven't talked about because it's an Avengers story. The uniforms are new, but I recognize the name Cyclops Angel. No wonder the name seemed to fit him. That's right. How is Professor Xavier?
And at this point, I think that he's out of the series. And Cyclops is like, fine, I think, but we're sort of X-Men graduates now, I guess you could say. And Cyclops has touched Thor's arm, and Thor's like, ouch! Cyclops is wondering why Thor said ouch, and Thor's like, I slew one of the Marauders, but not before he had broken my arm. Suffice it to say that the bones are grinding together. And Cyclops is like, then we'd better apply a little first aid and fast. This isn't going to be neat, but it'll do the job for now. And he uses his eye beams. That's what Cyclops does. He has eye beams that destroy things. And they destroy the metal sewer ladder, which I guess could have led them to the surface if they had destroyed it. And he makes a kind of a makeshift splint to hold Thor's arm together. And they pull a strip off of Thor's cape to hold it there. And they'll do a little bit of first aid on him. And Marvel Girl's like, this should hold your arm securely till you can have it looked after, Thor. And Cyclops is like, now we've got to get back and find a doctor for Angel. But what about the dead? We can't just leave them here. And Thor's like, well, you can leave the dead to me. Ooh, my. The battle is over, and these poor souls died in agony and innocence. I shall give them a Viking's funeral. You had best leave the tunnels. Do not tarry. And Cyclops is like, well, listen, Thor, when you get upstairs, you're going to hear some things about us that aren't true. I mean, what is... We're not exactly what everyone thinks we are. You needn't say any more, Cyclops. I learned a long time ago not to judge a book by its cover, or a man by what the newspapers say about him.
We appreciate that, Thor. More than you can know. You'd better see a doctor about that arm as soon as you can. Let's get out of here.
And X-Factor goes wandering off. And Thor's kind of trying to figure out what to do about all these bodies, since he said he'd deal with it. And there's an awful lot of these things. And he's like,
I've covered the length and breadth of the catacombs beneath the city. The battle is over, and these poor creatures are the losers. Save myself. Not a soul remains alive in this desolate place. No one is left to mourn the dead or to bury them, and should they be left untouched, they might well become a health hazard to the living above. By now Cyclops and the others have reached safety back among the living, but for those who died in this foul place, the God of Thunder shall sound the death knell. So many slain, a kingdom of death in miniature. Hela must be enjoying this. Even now, no doubt, she sits on her dark throne and revels in the tragedy, and he hears a sound from behind him, a scrawlm. He wheels around, like, what? And it's Hela standing there behind him. And she says,
I am not a believer in the tragedy of death, Thor, nor do I take delight in its cruelty. I merely appreciate its necessity.
And Thor's like, liar!
Well, perhaps I do enjoy it a little. The craftsman takes a certain pride in the skill of his hands, does he not? But far more will I enjoy what is about to happen to you. In fact, I have journeyed all this weary way from hell to share the knowledge with you. For I am going to teach the mighty Thor, who has never known fear before, to be afraid. Do you remember the weakness you felt as you left Asgard to return from Earth?
Well, we remember that from last issue.
'Twas the kiss of Hela's gift, Thor, the gift you feel now. From this day forward, mighty Thor, warrior of Asgard, will fear to enter combat. For his bones are now as brittle as those of an old woman, and when they break, they will not heal. Nor will you find respite in the arms of death, for I have cast you out. And the absence of death is eternal life. The God of Thunder will live forever, until his every waking desire shall be to die. You will scream out Hela's name in agony. You shall long for death, and perhaps some day, if it pleases me, I may release you. But it may never please me. Thus I am revenged for my humiliation at your hands in hell, Thunderer.
And she's referring back to Thor number 360 through 362, which we covered some time ago. And she's like, ha 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 ha. And she disappears with a katham. And Thor doesn't look too pleased here. He's like, hello! And he bangs his hammer on the ground and all this lightning is shooting out of it. Hello! And the fire sweeps through all of the catacombs and is burning up all the Morlocks and their bodies and their, you know, like the places they lived and all their stuff. And anyway, so everything that's down here in the sewers beneath New York City is being consumed by fire, which was apparently started by Thor's hammer. And when it all is over, no one is left in the sewers and all the bodies are ash and all the stuff is ash. And it's just Thor down there now. And he's standing there all alone. And you get a little bit of like a voiceover here. A little quote from Mask of the Red Death here. And the flames of the tripods expired. And darkness and decay and the Red Death held illimitable dominion over all. Thor, the son of Odin, stands alone in the darkness. And wonders if he will come to envy the dead. Next, disconnect them dry bones. An absorbing tale of exoskeletal dislocations, ephemeral villains. And a good ribbing for Thor, along with the reappearance of one of Thor's many dangerous foes. Don't say we didn't warn you. I wonder what the absorbing comment means. And that is Thor number 374. All right, so what about these two issues here? Well, okay, well, we're getting to an era of Simonson's Thor where it's what I generally consider to be his lesser work. And which is not to say that it's completely bad. I do like Simonson's writing. I do like some of the ideas I have. This whole idea of Thor having brittle bone disease, I kind of like it. It's certainly different from anything that's been done with the character before, because it adds some stakes to it. Remember I was talking about last episode, I was talking about how when you have the Thor God of Thunder series and you know that Thor's going to survive in young Thor's age and the current Thor's age, because you have ancient Thor, so you know that he's going to live. Here you don't know that. You really don't. You kind of assume that Marvel will find some way to undo the damage, make Thor better, and this is something that you know that Thor is going to win in the end, because he's the hero of the book. I mean, unless the book is really selling really poorly, they're not going to just kill off Thor forever. But this is really the beginning of a long-form subplot.
something that's going to go on for a while, something that's going to run through many stories. You're going to have Thor getting hurt more. You're going to have, you know, ways to keep him from getting hurt, becoming more and more of a factor in the stories. And this is something that I think is really, really interesting. Even though I don't think it's Simonson's best work, I do think there's something to it. Now, again, I'm not a big fan of Sal Buscema's art, and I don't apologize for that. I think that a lot of, especially in these stories that are about children, a lot of the children look alike. I mean, you can look at Mick and Kevin, who look like little Italian children. They look exactly the same as Thor's boss's children, you know, the guy who has six kids. They all kind of look sort of like little Italian kids, like Dondi or something. You know, it's nothing unusual for a comic book artist to not be good at drawing children. I mean, look at John Byrne's work on Legends. And he kind of drew Billy Batson as his little misshapen dwarf thing. Though, even though he's not good at drawing kids, I mean, they don't all look alike the way Sal Buscema's do. And I guess that's just a limitation of Buscema's art. And I don't think that it's well served by the story. Now, Sal Buscema is capable of, you know, kind of your standard superhero stuff. We see he did, you know, with the Baldur the Brave miniseries, that he could kind of do the Asgardian thing too. But he is very limited as a penciler and inker, and I can't imagine somebody like Sal Buscema getting work at Marvel or DC today. But again, not really my favorite. But anyway, yeah, so continuing on, we're going to continue on with this next issue. Not on this show, but next week we'll continue on with the Simonson run. We're going to kind of cover this first little story arc here of Simonson's Thor, and then we'll see where we go from there. So for now, we're back in 1986, 1987. All right, so I hope you folks enjoyed this longer show for a change. It's been a while since we've done a good long one. I have to say, I really do like the shorter shows. I do like the fact that they take less time to record, they take less time to edit, but at the same time, they don't cover as much material, and I do like to cover, you know, a fair volume of material. But you know what? There's only so much material to cover, and eventually we're going to run out of it if we're not careful. Eventually we're going to run out. Anyway, thanks very much for listening, everybody. And of course, there are different ways you can get a hold of us if you want to. You can join us on Facebook and the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group, or indeed you can email us, and the email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. All right, so it's time to go back across the Rainbow Bridge to Midgard, and we will see you next week.